Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, That Time When edition. Welcome back. This was such a well-received video last time out when we did the Lewis Hamilton move to Mercedes. We've decided to do another one for YouTube, for audio, for everywhere you like. My name's Matt Gallagher, and it wouldn't be the same if it was just myself. We have Katie, the new WTF1 editor. Hello, Katie.
Hello, guys. How are you both doing?
I thought you were about to ask the audience there. That was a bit odd. Like, how are you? And we also have the WTF1 founder, and a man who I've actually heard beat Damon Hill in an arm wrestle using his little finger. Tom Bellingham, how are you?
I'm good. Feeling bulky and muscly today, yeah. I've got the strongest little finger in the world.
And we move on from that then. So today we are discussing the seven drivers that won the first seven races of 2012. Yes, you heard that right. 2012 started off with an absolute worldie. The whole season was a worldie, but the first seven races, seven different winners, and we're going to dive straight into it. How excited are you both, Tommy and Katie, talking about something where one team is not dominating?
Incredible. My favourite season, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, it seems like it didn't even happen. When you look at the dominance that we've got now, to have seven different winners in seven different races, just magical.
As I say in the internet's best reactions, let's begin at the very beginning. And that was the start of the 2012 season, where Sebastian Vettel had just won his second world title. He was very dominant. Oh, someone's having some cutlery smashing in the background. No worries if you want to have lunch, by all means. Who was it?
No,
who was it? Come on.
It was me hitting my foot against the chair. Katie. Oh, what an amateur.
Katie, it's fine. But we're talking about Vettel, second world title, very dominant. And I guess we were coming into thinking it would be the same again, just like we are in this Mercedes era. But there was the banning of the blown diffuser, wasn't there, Tommy?
There was indeed, yeah. Vettel had dominated, like you say, 2011 in particular. People sort of shoe under the whole Red Bull era as this dominance like Mercedes have. But if you think, we did a podcast on 2010 before where you had this amazingly close title. 2011 was much more of a dominant performance where Vettel wrapped up the title very early and won so many races. But in 2012, Red Bull were a little bit on the back foot in testing, and they banned this blown diffuser, which, if you're unaware of the blown diffuser, it essentially, won't go into it too much because I'm not a tech expert.
What? But you're not?
No, exactly. No, I'm
okay.
Not.
All right.
But they blew exhaust gases into the diffuser and it created more downforce. That's a very simple explanation of it. But they didn't...
very simple, and yet I still don't understand it.
Exactly. But basically, it was banned.
It was. It was originally meant to be banned from the 2011 British Grand Prix, but lots of teams applied for a delay, so it came into effect at the start of the 2012 season. But many of the teams were using the 2011 young driver test at the end of the season to sort of test out new parts, such as Williams and Mercedes. So there was some preparation to go into the 2012 season for these new rules that had come into place.
And that wasn't the only change that occurred. We also had, there were lots of different names for, well, dildo noses was one of them, wasn't it?
That was 2014.
Was that 2014?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, no, sorry. 2012 was where the front noses were changed to the infamous stepped noses. 2014 was when it was another era of terrible front wings. This was also a bad era for them where essentially it was just a... Well, I think we did one in one of our videos, didn't we? We went to Tour de Force and showed off one of the step noses there. But, you know, essentially just a straight line, then it just goes down and then another straight line. Looked awful.
Yes. Yeah, essentially what happened was the rules were trying to make the noses lower because they were worried that high noses, if you sort of have a T-bone incident where you're T-boning another car, the nose is going to be almost at like driver head level. And that was a worry for safety. So they said, no, you need to drop the nose. It
was that after that insane crash with Webber and Kovalainen?
Yes, but mainly the reaction was because of the Schumi one, when Schumi and Liuzzi in Abu Dhabi, when he spun around and Schumacher launched on top of the car. And it was like, yeah, those noses look pretty dangerous. But obviously they only put in the regulations like the FIA do, where only a certain bit needs to be lowered. And rather than making the cars look nice, of course, the first thing that engineers are going to do is, regardless of how they look, make them fast. And to make them fast, they just had this horrible step in it, which looked absolutely hideous.
No, it did. I agree. The pre-2012 regulations allowed the noses to be as high as 62.5 centimetres, and the new rules meant that it could only be 55 centimetres high, but that was 150 millimetres ahead of the front bulkhead, which explains the weird step nose that, yeah, it just looked horrendous, didn't it?
So bad.
But anyway, we carry on because the season was good, and does it matter if the ASX aren't there?
Everyone forgot.
No one looks at the 2012 season. Oh yeah, no, that was the time their seven different drivers won the seven first races, but weren't the noses up? You know, no one remembers that, do they?
No.
Let's go to the first race of the season, the Australian Grand Prix, and McLaren came out the blocks firing, didn't they? They were surprisingly dominant. It wasn't a great race, but then when is it ever a good race around Australia? It's just a track that everyone's so buzzed for because it's the first race of the season, and yet we never usually have complete and utter worldies around there because it's a half street track. But Button won from Vettel and Hamilton with our Lord Master Maldonado. I was about to say, Pastor Maldonado had some surprise pace, but crashed. Shock.
Of course he did. Yeah, Red Bull struggled a bit pre-season. Everyone thought, you know, we've had Mercedes struggling pre-season and everyone goes, oh, it's fine. As soon as it gets the first race, they'll walk it. But Red Bull didn't. They qualified. Vettel was 6/10 off pole, which is a huge margin. McLaren locked out the front row and were 3/10 quicker. A lot of people forget that McLaren should have won that season. You think of the Red Bull dominance, but McLaren had built an absolute banger of a car and just dominated that first race. Vettel got past Hamilton in the pit stops. But then, yeah, Pastor Maldonado being Pastor Maldonado, he was having the race of his life trying to catch Alonso for P5 and binned it in the wall on the last lap, bless him.
That is such a Maldonado move, if ever I've heard of one. But fortunately, I mean, we'll go into it later, but he was sort of able to redeem himself later on in the season. But yeah, like you say, not a great race. I mean, I suppose it's quite a controversial opinion. I don't mind Melbourne as a race to go to. I think part of it could be that I'm so excited F1 is finally back that they could be racing around a car park and I'd still be hyped.
Yeah, so gets a free pass, doesn't it? But like you say, the races are never...
Yeah.
Usually, unless there's some kind of rain or chaos, a lot of the time the races can be, it's just really difficult to pass there, isn't it? Mm.
But it was interesting from Jenson Button. So he went to win the Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton on pole position, as we might have mentioned earlier. But the team said they made a mistake in calculating the fuel load for Jenson, making him use a severe fuel saving mode from the 8th lap of the race. So he went on to take the win, which was good. But yeah, it was, the race itself was pretty exciting, I'd say, for an Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah, that was a time where McLaren made a big error in calculations, but actually got away with it, which doesn't happen later, which we'll go into.
Well, going from a race that, you know, some people may not think was very good to a very, very interesting race at the Malaysian Grand Prix. Obviously very sad that Sepang isn't still on the calendar. It's a track that's always thrown up so many surprises, not one because the circuit is actually quite good, but also the fact that just weather, climate, always changing. But McLaren were 1-2 in qualifying again, but as I mentioned, we had some Malaysian monsoon weather, and it allowed us to see a very strange, and has some sort of controversial conspiracy theories around it, doesn't it, Tommy? We've mentioned this before in a That Time When podcast, I think. But we had a battle between Alonso and Perez for the win, but Sergio mysteriously went off.
He did. Yeah, Ferrari. So we spoke about Red Bull having a bad pre-season where they were struggling to match McLaren's pace. But Ferrari were in a whole world of problems. They qualified 12th and 16th for Australia and 19th and 12th in Malaysia. They were, you know, really struggling. Alonso had won some races in 2011 and was hoping to challenge for the title like he did in 2010, but I think they were pretty sure that wasn't going to happen because the car was just dreadful at the start of the season. So yeah, very unlikely to see not only Alonso up there, but then Sergio Perez, who's only in his second season in F1. And he was chasing down Alonso trying to get his first win, but sadly did not.
No, it was a good race. I mean, like you say, the Malaysian monsoon weather, which is something that normally always seems to happen. Whenever we went to Malaysia, similar kind of thing happens when we go to Japan. It's always in like the really rainy seasons. And Hamilton got pole position, but Jensen was able to overtake him in the first few laps. But then the race was postponed. It was red flagged for nearly an hour due to the rain conditions because they were just completely undrivable.
Biblical.
Yeah, it was insane to see. But yeah, when they got back to racing, like you say, the battle for the win between Alonso and Perez was excellent. And it was Perez's first podium of his career in Malaysia and really made a lot of people sit upright and actually pay attention to this new kid on the block. I think he was like 21 or something like that. So fairly young in those days. Obviously now we have 12-year-olds driving F1 cars, but... but yeah,
is a Ferrari junior as well.
He was, yeah.
So
the conspiracy theories.
And the controversy happened because Sergio Perez was closing in on Alonso, and this is when Sauber had a huge sort of they were really close to Ferrari. They were pretty much like a Ferrari B team at this point. Engine supplied to them, their drivers similar to Alfa now, I guess. But what happened was, Sauber were doing obviously amazingly well. They'd never won a Grand Prix, and they came on the radio to Perez and said, "Checo, we need this position, be careful." And then immediately he went off, which is probably from a team, you know, as soon as they're thinking about it. Perez was just driving the race of his life, not thinking about it, and as soon as the team told him to calm down, that's probably when he overthought of it and made a mistake. But a lot of people thought that, some people thought it was just a genuine thing of Sauber going, look, this is such huge constructors points for a team like us that's going to get so much money. We can't afford you to bin it in the side of Alonso.
I believe that one, to be fair.
I believe that one.
I don't think there was any conspiracy.
Yeah, and then more sceptical people believed that it was just a way to be like, we don't want to annoy
Ferrari.
Which I don't believe at all, personally.
He was closing in so quickly as well. It was such a shame for Perez because, I mean, Katie says that everybody sat up and saw Perez as a great driver. Obviously, he had that season at McLaren, and then his season just stagnated from there. Well, his career stagnated from there, didn't it, really? That's why there's been lots of calls nowadays for Perez to get that Red Bull seat, because everyone thinks that he's finally, you know, well, he's probably years ago he hit that stage where he could go back to a top team, but he's just never had the opportunity. But as you say, Alonso won by just 2 seconds, even after that mistake. So, it was a very strange race, wasn't it? But considering, because no one expected Alonso to win a race because of how bad the Ferrari was.
It's amazing to think that if Perez had won that race, it would have been 8 in a row because of how the season eventually panned out.
Spoiler alert. Nice.
Yeah, spoiler like alert.
We interrupt this WTF1 podcast for a very quick chat about our sponsor for this episode, Manscaped, who are the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. And they've just launched in the UK. You can be one of the first men in England to experience their life-changing products. The Manscaped engineering team has perfected the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created, and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 in the UK. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. And when I tell you this is premium, I mean premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes so you can take a longer shave. The waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower, and one of the coolest features is the LED light which illuminates grooming areas for a closer, more precise trim. And let's not forget about the charging stand. Show your mower off loud and proud, because this intelligently designed stand is a convenient charging dock powered by USB. If you fancy giving Manscaped a go, then we're willing to give you 20% off and free shipping with the code WTF1 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code WTF1. Your balls will thank you. Right, let's get back to the podcast. Okay, moving on to the next one, which is the Chinese Grand Prix. A lot of people may know that as my favourite one to watch. That is an unpopular opinion, but here we are.
Underrated race, though, isn't it? Love a bit of China. Underrated, though, China, isn't it?
It is underrated. I think we've had some good races around there, and yet no one really sees it as a great track, which I personally love it. But anyway, this isn't the reason why I like it as well, because Mercedes were unbelievably quick at the Chinese Grand Prix. You had Nico Rosberg on pole, Schumi on second, and that was thanks to a controversial system. Tommy, do you have more on that?
I do. So
do you
Mercedes,
like that? It's like a news thing. Like, I even put my hand to my ear. Like
Tommy.
Yes, thank you, Matthew. I'm here.
Our tech correspondent,
Brackley. No, so
B-tech
Mercedes.
Carry on.
B-tech.
That's not possible.
Mercedes had a system which was essentially called was nicknamed double DRS, and the way they did it was their fuel. Their DRS flap would open and the air could channel round the rear wing back into the car and basically give them huge straight line speed. And obviously we know China is one of those tracks where straight line speed is very important because there's a 1 kilometer straight. So this gave Mercedes an absolutely massive advantage. And yeah, Rosberg was on pole by 6/10 from Hamilton, initially, but he had a gearbox problem because McLaren.
No, it was great to see Rosberg get Mercedes' first pole position since they came back into the sport in 2010. And like you say, with the issues with Hamilton, it promoted Schumi up into second. And I'm sure people such as Matt got very excited at the prospect that Mercedes were going to be this really amazing super quick team. Yes,
yes.
The circuit helped, no doubt, but certainly the hype train was going. And as somebody who, I think I've mentioned this in a previous podcast, I supported Nico Rosberg at the time. To see him get his, you know, first pole position and then later on get his first win, that race is particularly special. But it was a good race. It's nice to see somebody different winning. Obviously, at the time, we had two previous different winners at the season. And then Mercedes, in a few years' time, just went on to win everything. But at the time, it was lovely to see a new team.
Yeah. So nice to see Mercedes win.
Yeah.
Now, so different. but the funny thing is, I actually looked back. So when Rosberg won that race, it was Mercedes' first victory since 1955, of course. And it was their 10th victory in Formula One. 8 years later, they now have 114. Wow.
I don't want to talk about it. Neither do I want to talk
Schumi's gone.
Yeah, neither do I want to talk about Schumacher and
pit
stop issues, but then he actually DNF'd, didn't he?
He did.
He came to a stop.
His tyre wasn't fitted properly in the pit stops when he was running second.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. No worries.
God.
I'm over it. Schumacher had ridiculously... I mean, he didn't drive particularly well, but he also had some terrible luck when the Mercedes was actually good.
Yeah,
frightening.
Definitely.
But I guess that maybe people say it evened out a little bit, his previous 7 world titles. But anyway, we won't get into that. And another point for the Chinese Grand Prix was that Red Bull were nowhere.
They weren't, yeah. Sebastian Vettel actually missed Q3, which was a
missed
major.
Q1, didn't even get...
Missed Q1, didn't even turn up. No, so yeah, they qualified. Webb was 7th, Vettel was 11th. And they finished 4th and 5th, 30 seconds off Rosberg for the win. So not what people were expecting from that season.
Definitely not.
I think if you're Christian Horner or Adrian Newey, you might be starting to panic slightly at this point in the season with the pace that they've had.
Well, definitely. They didn't need to, did they?
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Because we segue to the next race, the Bahrain Grand Prix, where Sebastian Vettel was back to his usual self back then, not now. Where he won from pole position. But Kimi Raikkonen should have won for Lotus, but made a half-hearted attempt. Why is that, Tommy? Correspondent?
Yeah, if you watch it back, Kimi Raikkonen was on fire. Not literally, but just so quick. He had the pace to win that race. He was catching Sebastian Vettel, who was, like you say, leading from pole. And he had a really good chance down the main straight, DRS, Bahrain being one of the easier places to overtake. And he thought better of it. He had space down the inside, but thought better of it. And then the opportunity never came again. So it's one of those things where Kimi Raikkonen, you think maybe he'd have died down the inside. But at the same time, maybe that's more the experience of Kimi knowing that in this crazy season where everyone's winning and then DNFing in the next race, that consistency could be key. And maybe his brain was thinking, you know, like Sergio, we need this position. It could have easily gone Kimi's way, but instead Vettel finally won a race. You wouldn't expect it would take him four races after how dominant he was in 2011.
No, I mean, we talked at the beginning of the podcast about Vettel's performance in 2011. He won 11 of the 19 races and was on the podium 17 out of 19 races. The only other times he didn't get on the podium during 2011 was when he finished fourth and he also had a retirement. So it just shows how insanely, you know, competitive he was that season. In Bahrain, Kimi started 11th and managed to work his way up to second, which, I mean, we've seen it previously. I think it was in Portimao when Kimi started and made the most amazing, you know, made up 10 positions in the first lap. But he, yeah, like Tommy said, he wanted to keep it consistent. And I think that was probably quite a sensible plan, as much as it would be lovely for him to have won from 11th, keeping those points in the bag, keeping them safe. And it was a good plan because the season was so mad that actually by doing that move and keeping in that position, it ended up being quite a clever thing to do.
Absolutely. A few more points from the Bahrain Grand Prix was that McLaren were messing up again, as Tom has already started to say that was a running trend of problems.
Two pit stop errors for Hamilton, which cost him. So Hamilton started the race in second, and his first stop, this is back when the Pirellis were, you know, high tyre deg and people used to stop quite a lot. Hamilton came in for his first stop. McLaren messed up his stop and he dropped way down the field, a really long stop, like 10, 12 seconds or something. Came in for his second stop, exactly the same thing. So he ended up eighth. And I was watching back the season review that the BBC did, and they're actually talking about Jenson Button is actually talking quite honestly about how McLaren sort of threw away these races, which is rare because obviously he was still staying with that team, and it's rare that a driver's maybe so critical about his team. But what McLaren were doing were they were trying to get sub 3 second pit stops at this stage. Obviously, we'd only just banned refueling at this point, so pit stops, they were trying to get under 3 seconds, and McLaren were introducing all these fancy gadgets and gizmos and stuff to try and make this happen. And Jenson Button was saying, in hindsight, I really wish they'd done this in winter testing or at the end of the season, not during a season when we had the best car by a considerable margin at the start and we should have not been throwing away races.
Sub 3 second pit stops as well when we're now at 1.8 with Red Bull. It's like,
yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, but it shows like Mercedes don't win the pit stop award every year, but they know that, you know, not to mess
just
about.
Consistent, and, yeah.
Yeah, just be consistent. So, yeah, and it was amazing that you went after that race, you still had 10 points separating Vettel, Hamilton, Webber, Button and Alonso, which is exactly the same, same five that were in the amazing 2010 championship fight, so it looked like it was going to be another 2010.
Do you think, guys, that it was probably at this point in the season, and we'll talk about the Spanish Grand Prix in a moment, that Hamilton was maybe thinking, do you know what, it's not worth me staying at McLaren, there's too many things that are happening that are messing up my Grand Prix, or do you think that's something that maybe came later in the season?
Probably next.
yeah. I'd imagine he's probably thinking about, yeah, well, especially when it's out of his control. You know, that's when, even when the performance is potentially there, they're not taking advantage of that, then, yeah, who knows? It's a weird one. Or maybe it was just when Mercedes came along with a massive paycheck. Who knows? Next up, the Spanish Grand Prix, which is always a belter. But actually, I'm not being sarcastic, because it was.
Because 2012. Even 2012, man. 2012 was so good, it managed to make Spanish Grand Prix about
just 2012 things. McLaren messed up again. Hamilton was excluded from pole, which meant that Pastor Maldonado took the maiden pole position. But Tommy, I hear you down in the pit lane again. Can you give us more on Lewis Hamilton excluded from pole?
Yeah, so Hamilton, like I say, set pole, should have been starting from the front row. McLaren with their amazing car again. Hamilton thinking, oh, well, at least now I'm back at the front. Get some points in the bag. And then McLaren didn't fill up his
I thought it was fuel, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he ran out of fuel on the in lap, which you're not allowed to do. And he was excluded, so he'd start dead last. Just another, you know, another race that McLaren threw away with this really competitive car. And yeah, Pastor Maldonado, of all people, was second that day. So he actually got his maiden pole. Unbelievable. What a drive.
It's like a parody headline, isn't it? Maldonado takes pole position. You think, hang on a minute, have I read that correctly? But yeah, when you listen back to the team radio of McLaren saying to Hamilton, you know, you're going to have to pull over to the side, and you can hear him saying, is it bad? And you just know at that point that he is not in a good place, having to go from pole position right to the back of the grid. But I mean, having Maldonado on pole position on that Sunday, I watched a similar thing to you, Tommy. I watched the BBC season review, and he was talking to them saying, you know, that he was pretty worried because he hadn't had the best starts that season, and he was lined up next to Alonso. So he's probably thinking, goodness, what on earth is he going to do here? But give credit to the guy, he did pretty well. I think Alonso got him in the first few corners, but he managed to make it work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he did. I mean, as much as everybody memes Pastor Maldonado, that was the day where he genuinely proved that he had some serious minerals. Like, not a lot of people would be able to win that race, especially when he lost the lead to Fernando. You know, you think to yourself, okay, let's try and get the podium. The fact he still won when he had the pressure of Fernando Alonso behind him for the entire race.
Yeah, exactly.
He was just one of those drivers, wasn't he, that was extremely quick, but just crashed a lot. A bit like Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, which makes it even more incredible that of all the races he won, it was one where he was under enormous pressure from two-time world champion Fernando Alonso. And to make matters even worse, Kimi Raikkonen had made an extra pit stop and was lapping like 3 seconds a lap quicker than everyone else. This was the era where Pirelli, you know, there was such a
shredding
huge difference
tires, yeah.
when you pit. Kimi was catching up, and it looked like it was going to be a three-way fight right to the end. And Maldonado, yeah, like we say, he crashed in Melbourne when he was on for this amazing result. And you think, oh, he's one of those drivers that's just
going to bottle it.
Going to bottle it. And no, he didn't. He won. Unbelievable. For Williams, who were, you know, Bruno Senna was nowhere all year, really. And Maldonado would occasionally crop up in 2012 with these incredible races where he just proved that he had unbelievable pace. And like you say, could amazing bottle for him to be able to put in that drive under such huge pressure.
It was outstanding, wasn't it? I messaged Tommy before we watched this, and I was watching the season review and got a little bit emotional. I'm somebody that cries at literally everything, like John Lewis Abbott, I'm a goner, anything like that. But seeing the elation from everybody at Williams, because it was such a, well, they still are underperforming team. They were a little bit more competitive in 2012, but to think that Maldonado is the last race winner for a team as historic and as special to the sport as Williams is still mind-blowing. But
yeah,
it was an incredible day, but took a really vile, horrible turn after the race when there was a fire in the Williams garage, and quite a lot of personnel were hurt, and obviously all the parts to the cars and things like that. But it did show that F1 could come together when, you know, people from garages all along the pit lane were bringing fire extinguishers and trying to do everything they could to help get and salvage as much from the garages. But I mean, to go from, you know, cloud nine to rock bottom in the space of probably what, like half an hour or an hour?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's like, it's quite chilling really when you think about it.
But let's not take away Pastor Maldonado.
No.
Let's not finish the Spanish Grand Prix on that. Obviously, it was huge elation for Pastor Maldonado, and it was an awesome, amazing story for Williams.
I think that just summarizes Maldonado, just the chaos of Maldonado, that his only Grand Prix win, the garage just burst into flames and exploded after the race for no apparent reason.
Good old Pastor.
Thank God everyone was all right. So,
yeah, absolutely. Right, now we move on to, well, where do pain. I begin?
Are you going to be all right,
where
Matt?
Where do I begin? No, look, it is painful, but it's also an incredible moment that I've watched over and over and over and over and over because Schumi got pole. Like, he did. I don't care if people go, he had a penalty. It's pole position. In my books, that's another pole in the records, but it's not. Because he had a penalty after crashing into Bruno Senna at the Spanish Grand Prix. But the lap, oh, goodness me. I can see it in my eyes, see it in my brain. It was just, it was, whether you hated him or you loved him, it was such an epic moment, even with the penalty overhanging, because you had the team radio and it was just so emotional. And yeah, it was, as a Schumi fanboy, it was probably one of my most favoriteest moment ever of Schumi.
I'm talking for you here, Matt, but I think because Schumacher won 7 world titles and, you know, broke every record in the sport, it makes it a little bit less painful that, well, at least, you know, he's got so many poles. And you, like you say, it's not a heartbreak where, you know, like a Nico Hülkenberg where he's finally going to get a podium and crashes, yeah, or whatever. It's one of those things that you can just look back on and appreciate because he's got all these poles, and you just think, wow, Michael Schumacher, regardless of the result and the penalty, we'd have loved to have, you know, seen him start from pole because, yeah, it's Monaco, probably would have won. Just to see Michael Schumacher being able to prove at that age, after all the criticism he had about, yeah, why has he come back and stuff, to prove at that age that he's still got it and could put in a lap like that, it was incredible.
Yeah, that's
such a good lap.
That's
amazing.
Good. That's the only superlative you could drop, Tommy. Is good.
Unbelievable.
Lap. Spectacular. But yeah, it's completely right. You know, it was the fact that, you know, people like me had to, you know, bat away all this criticism and ignore it all. You know, Schumi's past it. He's getting trounced by Nico Rosberg, which he was, you know, fair enough. But to set the fastest lap in qualifying around Monaco of all places was just like, yeah, I'm not going to bask in it too much, but I feel like that at least deserves a minute of just kind of, I wouldn't forgive myself if I didn't, you know, give this moment a serious kind of, praise.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Katie, what did you think?
I think you're more than right to, you know, have a moment of respect and sort of, you know, see what an amazing job Schumacher did.
I forgot how to start talking.
It's just getting so choked up. It's just too emotional.
Literally.
But it was a phenomenal lap from Schumacher. And I think it really shut up quite a lot of people that said, you know, after Schumacher retired in 2006 and then he said he was coming back to Formula One, a lot of people probably thought, mate, just stay away. Just, you know, you've done it. You've left on a high. You can just leave it there. But he came back, and to do so with that pole in Monaco, it was just spectacular. And like you say, Matt, for Schumacher fans or even just F1 fans, it still remains one of the best pole positions. And to see him after getting that pole and doing almost like his victory walk back to the paddock, it's so special. And yeah, I'm happy that it was part of this amazing 2012 season that we're talking about. It was excellent.
Yeah, because it went from expecting Schumacher to get pole and win all the time in his first career, and then his second career was, will he finish the race? Will he crash into someone? Will he, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. And then to do that was just incredible. Anyway, moving on to the race. Obviously, Schumacher had a 5-place grid penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 5.
Yeah.
Place, yeah.
Which is a shame, because I think he would have won that day, purely because of the fact that Webber started from pole and he won. And he held off a huge train behind him. And the top four were separated by 1.3 seconds at the finish. Schumi train would have been amazing. Anyway, it was a Webber train. Anyone, whatever, don't care.
He did. Yeah, it was just a classic Monaco race of Webber's tyres were rubbish at the end, but he managed to hold on because it's just so hard to overtake, and everyone was, like you say, right behind him at the end. I mean, top six were separated by 6 seconds. Vettel had actually managed to, I forgot about this, Vettel had managed to make his way from 10th to fourth, thanks to, you know, a good strategy and stuff. But yeah, Webber winning the race from pole and becoming another winner.
Yeah, and also having a Red Bull driver win in Monaco means we normally get to see a really cool jump into the Red Bull swimming pool in their floating Monaco, what's it called? Like,
Motorhome,
yeah. So
Floater home.
Floater home.
Yeah, that's what they call it, the floater home.
Wow. You learn something new every day.
I thought that's what you were the word you were thinking of.
I mean, that's new. That's new. Yeah. Thank you for that, Tommy. Really appreciate
that. You're welcome.
Yep, so that was the Monaco Grand Prix. As always, you know, Tommy will constantly say to keep it on the calendar, and yet the top four were separated by 1.3 seconds, and it was considered a rather big procession.
Yeah, it would have been a shame if they'd dropped it and we'd never got to see Shumi's pole. I'm sure you'd have loved that.
Drop it after 2012.
Touche. Touche.
Monaco's peaked.
It's yeah, fun. 2012 was it. 2013 onwards, no. Right, Canadian Grand Prix. We get to our seventh.
It's seventh.
The seventh round of the season. And Sebastian Vettel started from pole. So we thought maybe the train, not of the Monaco train, but the train of different winners would maybe be broken. But there was huge tyre degradation. This is where literally you could see like half a tyre just on the off the racing line, right? Like towards the end, it was genuinely looked like it had been snowing tyres, hadn't it? It's just like it was just black everywhere.
Yeah, if you watch a race from that era, yeah, offline is just marbles everywhere.
Ridiculous. So people with fresher tyres were coming through the pack. And, well, that enabled us to have our seventh different winner, which was Lewis Hamilton, of all people. The man that has broken every single record almost. Finally won a race in 2012, seven races in.
Yeah, who'd have thought, you know, after what's happened now, that we'd be saying Hamilton finally wins a race. but yeah, in this race, Alonso and Vettel had gambled and stayed out. This, like we say before, is an era where the tyres were just crazy in 2012. And part of the reason that this season was so mad and we had all these winners was because no one could work out what was the best strategy to do in the race, because the tyres would just fall off a cliff and
shred. Yeah.
Yeah, they just weren't used to it. So you had Vettel and Alonso going, well, we're going to go to the end. And then Hamilton, who, by the way, had another pit stop error from McLaren and dropped him, dropped him back. Just throw that in there. Yeah, exactly. So another add to join Mercedes list. He'd come back through the pack. He'd got fresher tyres at the end and managed to pass them easily. But other two people coming through the field was Romain Grosjean for Lotus, who it's back when Lotus were, you know, proper, who are now Renault, but
they were really quick.
And yeah, Grosjean popped in a podium in P2, and Perez as well, having another one of his amazing races where Sergio Perez, yeah, it's just incredible that season.
Yeah, he was. Both of those drivers seems quite rare now. I know we've obviously just had Perez on the podium in Turkey, but to have Grosjean and Perez on the podium, it's just like the good old times. But 1 week before the Canadian Grand Prix, the FIA declared that the floor used by Red Bull in Monaco was illegal. So they had to change all of that, which, I mean, obviously didn't work out too badly when Sebastian Vettel managed to get pole position. But yeah, the Canadian Grand Prix is another race, actually, that I think quite a lot of people aren't too keen on. I personally really like the Canadian Grand Prix. I think it's the track and the circuit is normally, and it gives us some pretty good entertainment. But yeah, it was nice to see Hamilton finally take a win after seven races, which, like you say, in modern days would just be unheard of.
Especially how good the McLaren was.
Yeah.
Had so many chances, if you think that, you know, got quite a few poles, would have been...
It actually got pole position first race of the year.
Yeah, and would have got it in Spain, got it in Malaysia, yeah, I think, Malaysia as well. So, yeah, the car that McLaren had at the start of the season, it's unbelievable that it took seven races for Hamilton to get a victory. But as was the way it went.
Absolutely. Great summary there, Tommy. So after seven rounds, just 3 points separated Hamilton, Alonso and Vettel. And the record streak was finally broken after Alonso's epic victory in Valencia. Well, people talk about that. People also talk about Schumi on the podium. You know, it's pretty much, you know, it's very similar, isn't it? You know, that was where Hamilton and Maldonado crashed, wasn't it? On the last few laps, was it?
It was.
And promoted
Schumi. Yeah, I'm sure we could do a whole podcast on that race.
It was incredible.
We can do a whole podcast on that race because it was a banger. But yeah, what a season. And this is, like I say, this is only just the start of it.
It is just the start of it. And we will do another That Time When podcast about Valencia 2012 and the finale in Brazil that year another time. And if you have any other suggestions, if you want us to do a that time when on a particular topic, then tweet us at WTF1official or use the hashtag WTF1podcast. Probably easier if you go along that route, because then we can filter it and find your suggestions and questions. And final thoughts from Tommy and Katie before we go.
2012, best season ever. Incredible races. Six world champions on the grid, seven if you count Rosberg, who obviously got it after the fact. You had essentially the championship battle of 2010 mixed with the title finale of 2008. It was just so, so good. And I was watching back that review, I think you watched it as well, Katie, from the BBC, and it made me realise of all the eras, a lot of people will look back and go, oh, I wish I was alive during, you know, Senna and Prost era and all this stuff. But I definitely feel immensely lucky to have witnessed that season live, and just because it was just unbelievable. So, so good.
I don't know how I'm going to follow that, Tommy, I'll be honest.
It was good. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. No, I totally agree with every point you said. I don't think there were any bad races in 2012. It just, even if there might not have been great racing content, the battle for on the driver's title and stuff like that was exciting. And yeah, fantastic.
Awesome. Hope 2022 brings us more of this.
21. Please.
Well, 21's going to be the same, isn't it?
No.
It's the same regs, but
no. No.
There'll be a magical Mercedes will forget.
Believe.
To be good.
I reckon the FIA will ban everything that Mercedes have built. There we go.
Just ban Mercedes. Point as well. Might be interesting.
Yeah, maybe that. We'll see. But something to spice up 2021. But if not, yes, 22. Hopefully. Hopefully we'll be good. God, I'll be turning 30 then. Anyway. Let's move on. Well, Tommy, you're already 45, but you look 12, so it doesn't matter. It's the right way around to have it. Anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for watching and listening. Make sure to give us 5 stars or a thumbs up or wherever you're listening or watching, because you know we deserve absolutely nothing less. Also, check out our sponsor for this episode, Manscaped, and that is about it. Thank you so much to Tommy and to Katie for taking the time to speak to us about that time when. And we'll be back for another episode very soon. Love you all. Enjoy. Will it be Bahrain? Yeah, this will be out before Bahrain, won't it? So yeah. Enjoy Bahrain, and we'll see you soon. Bye!
Bye!
Bye,
bye everyone.
Bye, I'm waving bye. 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 Bye, I'm waving bye.